I am very lucky, or the network is lucky, that you have such great co-chairs, Craig from Chicago and Jonathan from Montreal. And it was because of them, they both within like 2 days of each other wrote me, this is like over a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, saying that you were interested in talking with other professionals in technology in the Jewish human service sector. So we started this group. And there you are. Hi, Amy Allentown born. There you go. So with that being said, you guys take it over. I'm just here to let people in and, you know, get you guys talking.
Sure. I think when we were asked about topics, I didn't really have a whole lot that was on my hot list, but I have been talking to our execs and leadership about you know, things that they liked or didn't like about software we were using or platforms we were on. And I realized we didn't really have a process to manage that or to talk about how we would go about evaluating or assessing, other than, you know, if people have complained loudly about something, then we start looking into it. And I figured there's got to be a better way. And so I was curious to find out at all of your organizations, if you have a process in place for that, if you've advanced to the point where you have, you know, strategic objectives and you have like a matrix for measuring the effectiveness of one thing or another thing. I think this was right around the time of the N10 conference, which I was fortunate to attend this year. And just in dropping in on some of the sessions, I know there was talk of systems and tools and consultants to help with that kind of thing. But I thought first I'd open it up to the group and see how you all do that in your organizations.
Also, maybe Craig, just since we have some new people, why don't we just do a quick round table?
Oh, sorry about that. Sure. Just a little bit about us and what we're doing and why we're here.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you go first, Jonathan?
What they're doing, not what you guys are doing.
I'm Jonathan Wise. I'm from Montreal. We're an agency that does immigration, employment, family services, entrepreneurs. Prior to COVID, we were about 120. We cut down about 30% of our staff, 25% of our staff through retirement and cutbacks. We're 100% digital, remote right now. So no one's in our offices. I've been with the agency. Prior to our merger, I've been here about 16 years now, 16, 17 years in the position. So if you want to go around, I'll sort of, Amy, I'm going to go by my Hollywood squares. Amy, you're up next. I think we were in a meeting together.
I think it was in the N10 or maybe NTR. I don't know, something. Yeah, I did meet you somewhere because I remember your background.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm probably going to take more from the table here than I'm going to bring to it. Our organization is very tiny. It's social services. We have less than 15 people. We didn't have an IT department until a few weeks ago, and they decided that I could be the part-time IT department. So anything you guys have to offer is great. I mean, we're in the midst of trying to upgrade our database, but clean it up first. We have no policies. We have no procedures. We have no processes. So it's really starting from ground up. So anything you talk about, I'm going to be absorbing.
Super. Jim?
Hi, everybody. Jim Santiago, JVS Boston. I'm starting policies and procedures now. I actually hired a college student who is her senior year as a writer, and thought it'd be a perfect opportunity for her to start writing some of our policies and procedures. Created a standard template and let her loose, and she's created about five or six policies and procedures and continues to move forward on that. I'm kind of fortunate in the sense that JVS is does a couple of things. We do training. We also are Mass Hire is part of Boston Mass Hire is part of JVS as well. We help our learners get jobs, and so we've done as far as teamed up with a company called Tech Goes Home that will give laptops and hotspots to our clients for laptops forever and hotspots for a year.
Nice.
To minimize the digital
divide.
Thank you. And we're at the very beginning of our technology transformation, moving everything into our Salesforce platform with a couple of modules, a new ATS, a new learning management system, new financial systems, all within a 3-year roadmap that I built. So that's where we are.
Super. Bob?
Hello, I'm Bob Tomasek. I'm with Jewish Family and Children's Service of Minneapolis. And we are about 95% remote. There's just a handful of people who go into the office on a rotating schedule. I'm there at least 3 days a week, depending if it's package pickup or other maintenance things. We are pretty far along in terms of most of the documentation and policies and procedures. We have CARF accreditation that we do every 3 years, and that kind of forces our hand. I can tell you from the 2017 survey to the 2020 survey or 2021 survey, because 2020 got pushed to this year. They've drastically changed things. And so while we knew there were changes coming, and we've implemented different procedures for security training, for spam training, for network scans, that kind of thing, we're just putting together that documentation now and getting it ready for our survey starts in about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. So I've got the pieces for IT. I'm putting them in the right place and then getting them shined up a little bit, but it's quite a process.
Yeah. We went through it a couple of years ago. We did a full policy from HR to IT to everything. And we actually hired a law student to go through all the stuff, which was really practical. And then we used DocuSign to have everyone sign it, which was very, very efficient. So we didn't have to chase people. Wow. And if you're part of TechSoup, you can get DocuSign signed pretty cheaply. Yeah. And we're still using it extensively today. We're going to go to Keith right now.
Hi, I'm Keith Kirshner. I'm in Atlanta. I have technology and HR and facilities in my pot. We just finished CARF, and it was the first time we did it digitally instead of in person. So around process, around policies, it was interesting to do it all digital, not have the big binders. We do not have really a technology review in terms of that. One of our safeguards, I would say, is anytime that there's a spend associated with it, someone will typically say, oh, well, IT should probably look at that. And then we say, well, what passwords have you already set up, right? And so it's this kind of whisper down the alley. So being remote makes that kind of stuff harder. We don't always hear about, there's a new volunteer management and this and that. One of the things related to policies is that we use, our managed service provider uses a product called IT Glue, which is their knowledge base, passwords and things like that. We kind of feed them stuff. And so even if it's not a system they manage, I say like, hey, will you save this password and things like that. But policies, we have so many policies and it's hard to keep all of that current. So kind of managing the information generally is a struggle here. We have our big focuses have been really around SharePoint and Teams. We're a full Microsoft shop. And I'm in the midst of our first Salesforce project and found an interesting model from them that's kind of an accelerator. It's bare bones, but it's an interesting way to jump in. But that's my last couple weeks and next month or two.
Super. And Maryland, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name, so I'm not going to try.
That's all right. My name is Cephas Silvera. I am the CIO at JESA, or the Jewish Social Service Agency. We have about 500 employees, a ton of volunteers. We human services, 5 separate programs to include hospice, senior services, specialized employment, premier home care, and mental health. And so hearing about CARF, we're actually working on our first CARF accreditation. It seems like you're sharing some stories that shine a bright light of hope on the whole experience. I'm looking at it with dread and needing an umbrella and rain boots, thinking I'm stepping in something. Craig, you asked about intake processes, I guess, and governance, and I think I hear a little bit about policy. So from a policy standpoint, I think we're in a fairly good position, with us having to do HIPAA assessments on a year in and year out basis. It kind of pushes us in a direction where, you know, we need to be policy driven, right? As far as from a governance standpoint, we have multiple governance meetings, one with our hospice team, one with our mental health team, and are going to stand up specifically one for technology in an effort to better integrate across the 5 programs and hopefully reduce some duplication and effort and so on and so forth. I would suggest that we do struggle with an intake process. It seems to me that what you mentioned in the squeaky wheel is the kind of thing that we're still kind of in the infancy and kind of still abide by that, you know, that adage of whoever's making the most noise gets the attention kind of thing.
One thing that I'm not sure if everyone else is seeing this, we're seeing this, is people working remotely from different jurisdictions for tax implications. So currently I have employees, one in Mexico, one in Israel, one in another province, and 2 in other provinces.
Wow.
So then it becomes tax implications. So we're in the process of developing a policy of when people can go and if they go, because in theory, if someone's working in Alberta, which is another Canadian province, we should be paying Alberta deductions at source, even though they were hired here, but they went there to visit their sister at the beginning of pandemic and they've stayed there. So we've established a committee with IT and HR to work on that area, which is something that is totally COVID related. So just to throw it out there, just something that people may want to consider. Craig, do you have anything you want to add?
I'll just throw in a little background. We're JCFS Chicago. We're 400 and some-ish employees. We have mental health services, some adult autism group homes, K-12 schools, some career services, some HIAS and immigration, and you know, the whole bunch of many, many tiny to medium-sized programs that I'm sure all the rest of you have. And so it's a scramble to try and service and work with everybody's needs. We went fully remote for parts of the pandemic, but you know, some areas never went completely remote, and we are slowly kind of edging back into the office now and trying to integrate hybrid permanent work into our culture, even as we get vaccinated and hope for safe returns to the office for us.
Yeah. So to address one of the things Craig said is what drives the change in technology? You know, from our perspective, is it the end users? Is it the upper level users? Or is it the lack of data? I can use all 3 of those. I'm just throwing those points out there because those things kind of drive from us.
I think it's for us, it's all 3, but the executive team had a plan to upgrade our technology and all our processes. We started with an intake process, a formal we call unified intake process. We have 23 programs, so to take 23 programs and turn it into one intake is a challenge, but we're sort of in the middle of that piece and has started to roll out, I think it's five programs now on one intake form, and we keep adding programs and programs, and all that would be embedded into the Salesforce process for us. Data obviously is a big component for us and for all you guys. It takes our team days to create reports because they're coming out of multiple systems, spreadsheets, different areas, and it's really inefficient. So the whole idea really to get everything in one unified platform so that reporting and analytics could be a lot easier to drive. And then you add COVID on top of that, which escalated everything. It took the roadmap and it shrunk it down dramatically as everything started going remote. And then the possibilities started opening up for the users as if we're starting to do things remote, why can't we do this forever? Or why does every class have to be in person? So we're actually looking at what classes can stay remote and which ones can be in person and minimizing our footprint. So
I'm curious, Jim, how did you get synergy around your intake process? I have these five groups, and I don't know, three of them have some pretty headstrong leaders in them and are not necessarily eager to be a part of another process, as they would say.
Yeah, I think very fortunate because the company is embraced the transformation. So everybody's pretty much on board and willing to do whatever. As far as the intake itself, we assigned one, our senior VP of strategy, to be in charge of the intake. And then her job is to pretty much get everybody on board, and which she's done. And everybody's just waiting their turn to move forward into to the new intake process.
Any other questions, comments?
I think that need has been the catalyst to start it, where a program says, I can't get you that information for a report, or I had to stop working for multiple days with clients to do that. That's kind of what raises the red flag. I think most programs could use some enhancement. The biggest struggle is always the resourcing. And it's not just the dollars, but it's really thinking about who is the owner. And we are decentralized, like many of you are, where the programs are pretty headstrong and think that their process or what fields of information they need are so unique. And so really, until we started this Salesforce journey, which right now we're only starting with one program, but I'm visioning, based on conversations I had with Jim's team and others, going much broader, of we're going to have to make some of these tough decisions. But then the question is, okay, so we need it, but where's the time? And then where are the dollars? And then when I raise, and who owns it going forward? It's that kind of thing. So we get, starting the conversation isn't hard. It's the decision matrix and the commitment that's difficult.
Yeah, Keith, you're spot on as far as one of the struggles we have is we're trying to train everybody, but everybody's so busy with their everyday work and everything else that they're doing, plus working from home, managing their family lives who are also at home. It's a real struggle, but I keep saying it's a commitment we have to take somehow. And I'm giving them ample time, 20 hours a month, which is basically 30 minutes a week to just do some training. And it's a struggle. Everybody's busy. Time's a struggle, but it's a commitment we have to make.
And nobody likes doing database stuff, right? It's, for people who are lay people. That's who you're talking about, program managers and staff too.
It's most of them, but they're not really doing data work. It's more of a process. One of the things at JVS that we've done is, and I stress this from day one, is, you can add all the technology you want, but if you don't prove your business process, the technology is not really going to help. So we really focused on the process, which is why we started with the intake. and started with a redesign of our curriculum before we started introducing a Salesforce, a new LMS, things of that nature, making sure that the technology was assisting them in the process and not the other way around.
Correct me if I'm wrong. One of the fears is recreating a paper process electronically is not always the best way. That's the people I wanted like this, and you have to take it backwards and go forwards. One of the things that we struggled with was a lexicon, defining the terms and getting everyone to buy in of, we do immigration. So what do you define a new immigrant as? You know, we could have some people say it's 1 to 3 years. Some say it's 1 to 5 years. Some people say it's under 10 years. And then you have the definition. So, you know, we had a committee. It took us a year to get just a lexicon of 45 items or 50 items, because every time you come back, there'd be something new. And then, you know, it keeps changing. And now we finally crystallize our lexicon. So that's something that took a long time to do. Just wondering on thoughts on that, if you guys feel the same way.
Absolutely. We can't even, it took us a while to agree on whether it's a student, a learner, or a client. Something as simple as that. Some people take offense to the student because our clients are adults. And so I always use the term learner because I think it's generic enough, but you're absolutely right, Jonathan. That's once you get everybody on the same page, it makes things a bit easier. Not much, but a bit easier.
Yep. But then you restart the process because you forgot what you started with at the beginning. You relook at the term again, and then you say, really, this is what I said. Super. Maybe we're going to move on to the next part of the topic and saying, going back to the office, we put a little agenda together. What's people's timeline for coming back to the office? Are you going to be using the same footprint? Are people going to be using hot offices? Do you expect your footprint to be smaller? We're in the process of doing that. I'll tell you a little bit about what we're doing. Is we're originally, COVID was panic. Everyone thought we'd be back in the office in 2 weeks, 2 months. And, you know, we deployed everything from desktops to old computers to laptops to people's homes so they can work. And now we're coming to the realization that people are going to always be working part-time from home. So we're buying laptops, we're buying equipment, and we're probably going to set up docking stations in our office, and no one's really going to have we've divided our staff into four groups. The C-levels are going to maintain the two computers, one in the office and remoting into their office computer. The admin people with specialized software will do the same as the C's, but the frontline workers are going to be working with laptops coming in, plugging into some sort of docking station and work from the office and hot desking. That's what we're thinking of doing. And I'm just going to throw it out to the group and say, what are people planning? Or am I drunk, or is this something realistic?
I think it's something realistic. The feeling I get as of right now is that there's no intent for anyone to come back to the office. And then we kind of back into it from there. Everybody is fortunate enough to have a laptop. It was part of the process we went through is, as I was told on Monday, we need to get everybody out of office by Wednesday. Very interesting. I'm sure you all experienced it. But to answer your question, Jonathan, I think there's some level of reluctancy, even with vaccination, about how people are going to now re-engage one another and what does that really mean? So I think the desire will ultimately land in some hybrid space, but we're kind of sitting in a place, as I mentioned, where, you know, can you work from home successfully and how can I help you get to that place?
We had a lot of enthusiasm. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I just want one quick thing, Craig, then I'll let you go. One thing that is, we're human services, so we need to see our clients. So that's the big thing. So people need to go be in the office to see our clients. We've been 100% remote. No worker has been with a client except for outside, maybe for the whole pandemic. And so
I will say something to that. So I think federal regulation is going to drive some of this for us, right? You know, if we can't see clients, continue to use telehealth, then I think there will be a greater impetus on us bringing more people back into the office.
Craig?
I was going to say, we had a lot of enthusiasm for the idea of continuing remote and hybrid work when we couldn't go back to the office. And as the time where it looks like we might be able to go back draws closer, the discussions have intensified and there's lots of differing opinions on how remote or how not remote we need to or should be. It's opening up a lot of, I would say, like, fissures and differences in opinion, like management versus staff. How productive can you be? Staff can be really productive in their opinion. Staff is not that productive in management's opinion sometimes. We're having, I don't know if you, if any or all of you have union employees, but now that we've involved talking with HR about how we're going to roll this out, it's become a lot more complex and like fraught with steps that we can or can't or should or shouldn't take in terms of then equity and how much remote time can you offer employees or classes of employees, and are we exposing ourselves to grievances or to outsized numbers of HR accommodations, and are there going to be issues with that? So it's becoming a really contentious issue just in terms of the concept in our organization. And I didn't really expect that.
A lot of organizations. I run the affinity groups and COOs and HR. We just had HR today. And, you know, it's very complicated because so many people don't want to come back to work and feel like they can do their jobs from home. But, you know, management thinks that they should be coming back to work so they can see clients in the office, but some staff doesn't need to be in the office because they're not seeing clients, and then it sets up all kinds of unfairness. People don't feel like they're treated the same, and it's really complicated, I think. And
yeah, there could be
lawsuits and people vaccinated and not vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? And how are you going to impose that or not impose that, et cetera, et cetera.
I felt like since we were forced to get the equipment in place, that now we just sit back and wait for everybody else to decide. And like we kind of already know how to do it, but
What's better for IT people? Is it better for everyone to be in office or?
Totally depends, I think, on what kind of support your users need, what their home environments are like, and what the expectations are. Really, the contentious part of my discussions was, well, how much additional support are we going to give to people if they never come back? And do we have the resources in place to do that now? Sorry, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's also support. We're also seeing it as a way to get people, recruitment. Because if you can say you can work a couple days a week from home, it's a big thing. If, depending on people's commute, commutes are a lot worse in some of the cities in the States, but the commute can be 45 minutes to an hour for some people. 2 hours a day, you can save that and work from home. You know, you can make it up. The other thing is it's the stress on the IT team. You know, today we have an employee came back from long-term disability. We plug her into her system. She gets all working. However, her home router by her ISP doesn't allow VoIP, which is, she can't make calls to clients. So I have a tech going over to her house, install it. We bought a $70 router that she's going to end up using. So there's a 20% extra, 20 to 25% extra that we're doing from IT, just supporting people remotely, because I can't walk over or send someone over to their desk to take a look at what's going on.
Right.
So I think that's going to be the new norm because no one's going back full time. In my feeling,
which also increases.
What was the last?
Everywhere, I think that's true with many agencies. Everyone's going hybrid now.
And I think that staff retention. I mean, I really think this is a strategic thing. Craig, you made the point, right? We already did the hardware. In a sense, I think our departments had to be at the front end of it, and we figured it out. And we're like Jonathan, we're kind of doing those one offs. I think that we lose the interpersonal, and especially we're about 175 employees, about 100 office-based. So some of you much, much larger, and I imagine you deal with those things anyway, building the relationships and learning about all the other programs. But I really see organizationally that it's a struggle to keep that going if we're virtual. Yet we have a huge counseling practice that is thriving on tele, that is extremely reluctant to come back because their groups and individuals are saving time, not the clients as well, right? Not driving back and forth for sessions. Their attendance is through the roof. As long as we can keep HIPAA compliance and billing proficient, they're good. They don't want to be in person because then they have to wear a mask and they can't see facial expressions and they can't do their job.
Right.
So there's that challenge. Then you have the kind of the community. Well, you know, here the JCC is back and the older adult home has always been in person. They're 24/7. You know, how is amongst our kind of sister organizations, right? If we're not in person, are we really there? So I think we've done our work. I guess the one comment on kind of setting up, we did hear from those staff that see clients in person that they don't want hoteling or hot desk. They want share because they want consistency of environment for their clients. So they don't mind sharing a space with someone, you know, a Monday, Wednesday, Friday kind of thing, but they want their clients to have that same space. The rest of the staff, administrative and program, they said, that's fine. You know, with the couple days that I'm there, I'll go wherever. So we'll do some hoteling and some sharing.
I know in the past we've talked about equipment. And so when we start talking about hoteling, at least some of our staff are like, well, can I have a monitor for home? And so we've been telling them, take your monitor from your desk and take it home, which is great. But now we're going to, if we introduce hoteling, which we're not, but if we do, then we're going to need a monitor at their desk and then a monitor at home. And so our cost goes up from that standpoint. And then you're going to start getting into the conversation of, well, are you going to pay for my internet? Because now I'm home. And that conversation that we in the past been telling them, no, this pandemic, you're saving money, has turned into a different conversation. And now those conversations are kind of come back to the cost, that standpoint. From our standpoint, we're going by the state. We're talking September maybe to come back. We're not going to do hoteling. Everybody's desk is far enough away that it's safe enough for them to be there. We'll make some adjustments and we're just going to keep it that way for the client state, as you guys mentioned, but also just easeability across the board. So
if I can just, my wife works for a regional health board and she's been in 100% of the time. And if people wanted to work from home, great, you can work from home, but I need you in on the days that I need you in on, and you're going to come in. And will you pay for my internet? No, because you have facilities here in the office. You can do your work from the office. So that's been their policy.
Wow.
From the beginning. Wow.
She's in the finance department, so she's not really in there, but she said, we're open. You can come in. If you want to work from home, you have to adapt with your elements. And I think that kind of makes sense to me because the office is open. We have everything for you to work. Once we're opened up, we have everything to work from home. And Jim, for the same thing, we said to people, I need to upgrade my internet. I go, no, you don't, because you're saving on dry cleaning, you're saving on driving, you're saving on parking and wear and tear on your car. You know, we're not paying for that. And once I said that, these people, I didn't have any complaints. I had two people that addressed it and we shut them down pretty quickly.
How's it affecting recruiting? So from my perspective, people have gained this desire, right? As a part of their package that they have some guarantee that they can work from home. And it's also been beneficial in expanding where we can recruit. But, you know, to something you raised, Jonathan, there has been some additional concerns. So, for instance, California, they have different tax rules than Maryland. So, you know, we don't want to hire anybody in California. In New Jersey, I guess there's some. So there's been that piece. But I would say overall, employees that we're recruiting are certainly looking for this hybrid work from home more than coming to office kind of situation.
So one of the things that we've done is we've actually surveyed all our employees, and you'd be surprised. And even with our learners, as I send in some of the classes and we ask a question, would you prefer to be on site or remote? And we actually have employees that say, if you want me remote, I'm going to have to start looking for another role or another job, right? And others say the other way around. So there are employees that definitely want to come in, and there are employees that don't want to come in. So whether it's existing employees or recruiters or recruiting, there are people out there that want to physically be in. They're tired of being home. They want to come into the office and have that, you know, the luxury of being away from their desk at home.
We are seeing, I think, more. We saw very little turnover in the early part of the pandemic. And now I think we're seeing like accelerated turnover once people are kind of starting to figure out what it's going to look like after this is over with. There's definitely a shift from older to younger in general with our employees. And I don't know how much of that is just the expectation of the added flexibility, or that younger people are more comfortable with the idea of working from home and then using the technology to work from home. I don't have a handle on why, but it's been interesting to see that. I did want to say about equipment that so far what we've said is like, we want to give you as much flexibility as we can, as long as we don't supply you with anything more than what you have. So it, you know, typically a lot of our staff have a laptop, a docking station, and a monitor. So like, if you want to haul your monitor home and then just bring your laptop in on your office days, that's fine. If you want to leave your monitor at the office, that's fine. But we don't want to give you one of each for home and office. So like, one work setup and put it where you like.
Yeah. What about onboarding new staff? I'm finding it very hard because, you know, just in general, people in with database or other or procedures, there's no one walking them through the procedures. They can't stick their head into an office next door and say, how do you do this? So I'm finding a lot of weird anomalies coming through the help desk, that things that people should know that they in a normal situation. So how are you guys handling onboarding?
Do you have a learning management system?
No.
We had one that we didn't think we were going to roll into very quickly, and we have just used the heck out of it so far. We've been doing a lot of, like, you know, creating online content and doing short video presentations and even like embedding quizzes at the end of it. There's no way that we would have made that much progress had we not had to, but that's been really a big help for us. It still doesn't tick all the boxes, and we do have, you know, a higher volume of calls and support during somebody's first few weeks. But, you know, some sort of homebrew online learning system seems like a must have in your near future if you're going to have like permanent hybrid or remote, I think.
Yeah, we've started it. We're started doing some videos and stuff. Go ahead, Bob.
Craig, what's the name of that? That learning management system.
So our HR app is called UKI. It used to be UltiPro. And then I'm blanking on the learning management system itself, because we actually like embedded and linked it to UKI so we could use it as a facade. I will find out and get the information to everybody in the group. But it's one of a number of different competing products, and they're pretty good at linking with your HR system and showing you who did or didn't complete their courses and whether they passed their quiz or not. And it's been a nice addition for us. If I go back on mute, maybe I can find it before we're done with the call.
I'd love to hear about that. We're exploring. We use Paylocity for HR, and we're looking at an onboarding module, but also integrating an LMS. I think that would be a great, you know, just LMS in general would be a great discussion for this group.
Amy, are we overwhelming you?
No, I mean, it's actually all quite interesting, probably not applicable for an organization with the software, but, you know, I do kind of have a vision of where it should be and where I'd like it to be in a few years, you know, and we are starting to strategize. So all of this is very helpful. I do have one question, and you probably have heard of it. I saw it in the conference, Airtable. Has anybody used Airtable? And if so, do they know anything about the security? I figure maybe that's kind of small potatoes, you know, an organization like our size, not large organizations.
I have not heard of it, nor have I used it.
Okay.
I know someone, I think someone in Atlanta is using it for like inventory management, and they've used it for a couple of discrete projects, not for client related things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so they felt really comfortable. I think it's just a cloud-based kind of basic relationship management.
Yeah, we were thinking of using it for like workflow, you know, some simple workflow templates. But I hate using something if I don't have feedback from other people on security. You know, what's going to happen with the data? It's not like we're putting anything sensitive out there, but, you know, if no one else has used it, do you really want to use it?
I'd have another question if you have time.
Absolutely.
We had a telework policy, and, you know, before we went remote with the pandemic, and I found that a number of items, like, it was decided at the leadership level that we were going to flex that policy a little bit. Like the requirements of what you need to have at home is a little fluid. You know, if you didn't have good internet, maybe we could help you out, kind of thing. The problem I have with some of that is if it's company provided and they're not responding to email within like a 4 or a 6 hour window, like, what do you do? Like, has anybody experienced anything like that? Are you having trouble? Do you track your staff at all? How big brother do you get?
That's interesting, because we had one worker who was working in a very different time zone. And the CEO said to me, they're not answering my emails at certain times. Can you check when they're coming into the system? Because the way we work is you VPN into a remote desktop and you come in. So I could literally see when they logged in. And I sort of said, these are the hours. They came in at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock because there's 2 hour time difference. So they were working Mexico time, which didn't, it lasted about an hour, because once I gave the logs to the CEO, they solved it. So yeah, it can be an issue. Like, and people tend to be sensitive towards those things. We have one person in Israel, and one of my techs, they were having a problem, and the tech said, well, it's 11 o'clock in Israel. I go, it's 4 o'clock here in Montreal. I don't care if it's 11 o'clock in Israel. Call them up, get the problem fixed. We're not working on Israel time. So, you know,
that's right. You have to be very clear, right?
Yeah. We work in our time zone. You know, so I don't really care where people are.
But Bob, I think that's a really interesting question. And I think a lot of people are really thinking about that, because how can you track when people are working, or how can you make them work unless you put some sort of tracker on or have a policy that says that you need to respond within an hour of an email? And then you have, you're putting rules into place and guidelines into place.
It stems from frustration on my part. When we were all in the office, help desk was answering calls within 5 to 20 minutes, and we were knocking them down left and right. Now we email, they say, yeah, I need your help. How do we remote in? And then we tell them, and we don't hear back from them for half a day. I mean, it's not that they don't have other things going on in their world. People have children at home, and we get all that. Just send an email, give us an expectation, and we feel like we just get ghosted for about 30%, 25 to 30% of our staff. Like, you know, which is only 100
people. Telework policy. That's what
Right? Right. That's the thing. So, and Bob, I don't want to come down like a hammer, but sometimes you get so frustrated.
We had that, the ghosting, we had that for beginning of January. We expanded our team. We hired one extra junior tech. And he was like, I can't get a hold of the person. I said, book a Teams meeting. So when you have a ticket, if you make one phone call and you don't get a response, you book a Teams meeting, you look at their schedule and you book a ticket time with that person. So that they have that way you're not wasting all your time trying to trace that person down. And then we added a status in our help desk that says meeting book with client. So when I'm looking at the help desk and I'm seeing a ticket that's 3 days old, if I see meeting book with client, I can go in there and see when the date and time when it's booked. And I know that it's not ghosted. That's how I solved it. And it seems to work quite well.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I like that. Just book a time. And we've taken the step where they go back and forth twice. And then the third time, the supervisor's CC'd, I'm CC'd by help desk. You know, it gets to a number of other people like, no. Hang on. You know, and we're not trying to be bullies. We're just trying to get these problems knocked out.
You're trying to help.
I like the term ghosted because you don't know what's going on.
You don't, right.
And you're sitting there going, where are we at with this? And, you know, every day we have a staff meeting early in the morning with my team. And I'm just want to see if I have something sitting there too long, why haven't we booked something? Well, they haven't responded. Book a meeting didn't respond, kill the ticket. Like,
yeah.
That's actually an option that you could take, not even schedule a meeting. You just put in the SLA. They don't get back to you by this time. Ticket gets closed. Just move on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But does that really work, Jim? Because the person will still have the problem and they'll do it the next day and potentially the same thing can happen. It's like a waste of time in a way. I don't know. I'm playing devil's advocate in that.
No, it's fine. It's sort of like a training. You close it, then they have to open up another ticket. And then if you have to close it again, they'll learn real quick.
Yeah.
You know, they want it, they have to do it. So we don't do that here, but in my last organization, that's exactly what we did. If they didn't respond after two responses, that's it, ticket was closed, and the story, move on. So just an option.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I like that.
Right.
What about one other thing, just question for the group is, I call them frequent flyer repeat performers. So the person that still can't get a hold of the Microsoft Authenticator app, and I looked at the tickets, they did 7 tickets since January because they don't know how to authenticate themselves. How are you guys dealing with that? Because remote is difficult.
We try to do what we can with Zoom and go like or TeamViewer and log into their computer and walk them through step by step. But I get with Google Authenticator, it's a cell app. So if it's a company phone or a personal phone, we have them come in and we do it in person. That's the only way we can help them out.
We've been using TeamViewer Quick Support on the phone. Mm-hmm. So they could actually show the phone. But we have one person, I think it's 8 tickets for their authenticator.
Wow.
Yeah.
Since January. Just want to. Anything else, guys? I don't need to. Craig, anything else, Dad?
I don't think so. Anything we went through and passed that anybody wants to come back to and dive into in more detail? I don't know if we.
Or any suggestions for the next time? Any suggestions? We're probably going to meet in about 6 weeks or 8 weeks. Any suggestions, maybe send to Alyssa or to Craig and I for topics that you guys want to discuss. We're very open to the subjects. We're just trying to pick things, and we're very open to hearing this because I think everyone benefits from the discussion.
I think someone mentioned learning management software.
Yep.
If that was something that people were potentially interested in.
Yep. So, Bob, I'm not sure if... I actually went digging around on our HR site, and I don't see some links that I used to see. It could be that we've actually gone and used the built-in LMS, which I know we looked at initially, but then our HR provider was bought by another HR provider.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you want to check into, now they are called UKG. They used to be UltiPro.
Okay.
I'll put that in our chat.
At least it gives me a place to start from, though, because like if I talk to my HR person or if I talk to my payroll person, I can ask them if there are additional modules that would make my life easier, because I could see filling, you know, 10 or 15 topics of just two minute videos or less. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do this. And that would really help.
That's what we're doing with our conference. We're sending out a video on how to use it. Elisa, yeah. Who, you know, is the facilitator of this, she will be the one who's demonstrating it. Let's hope that you all understand it. But what I wanted to say to Bob is, how you guys doing in Minneapolis? What a terrible time.
Yeah, it's
a tragedy.
It's unspeakable. I mean, I don't, you know, it's really devastating, especially what we're hearing out of the cities. And I don't know if everybody's hearing the same thing or not, but female police officer with 20 years experience thought she pulled a taser and didn't, pulled her handgun. So, I mean, that's, and everybody's just kind of reeling, you know, another tragic death, which makes everybody just, you know, I'm thankful that there's been calm, but I'm shocked that there's been calm, because the community, the emails that we're seeing passed around, you know, it's horrific and shocking. But you know, the violence seemed to subside. You know, they released a video really quickly. I hate to say, you know, and I don't speak for anyone but myself on this, obviously, but it's like maybe the city learned from last year. You know, maybe they learned to talk about it and to be open, right? Because through conversation, hopefully we can better understand. And I mean, another person's dead. And what do? You know? So I think there's going to be more peaceful marches. And that's what I'm hearing and seeing through the email going around and through the news media here. And I hope they do. I hope they have a lot of them, and I hope it brings a shift, because, you know, enough already.
Enough already. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I speak on behalf of myself and potentially everyone here. You know, we're thinking of you all in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, you know, just when you think you can put something behind you, no. Here's another reminder. This has been systemic.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
But the only other thing I could think of in terms of IT for would be any CARF documentation, if there'd be a way to kind of look at other people's just to get better ideas and maybe make mine a little more well-rounded. You know, that'd be a pretty interesting way.
You mean everyone share their screen with whatever you want to put up?
Or if there was any kind of place to share documents, like I could send PDFs up somewhere, or
you have a resource library folder, IT folder, if you guys even know about it, but I can put how you get into it in the chat. You can copy and paste it, but that's a great idea if you want to do that.
And Bob, I'd be happy. It was my first time, but our organization's done 4 rounds of CARF. But my experience is that it's really about confidence in presenting. They have standards, and they're less concerned about specifically what do you have. They want to know that you're thinking about it and doing it. And it's also very dependent on who your surveyors are.
Cool.
I mean, extremely dependent. And apparently it used to be the history that it was a little bit of wine and dine and schmooze, and, you know, you have dinner together, you know, the senior leadership and them, and, you know, it's very collegial. Now it's different with the virtual ones. But it's, I think there's just as much art as there is science is my takeaway.
Interesting.
And I'd be happy to talk about our experience.
Great. Great. I can say that this would be my 3rd, maybe, coming up, but I wasn't involved for the many, and we've had CARF accreditations, I think 5 or 6 of them, but we've lost some people due to retirement, and they were the ones spearheading it. And now from the last survey to now, it's been dispersed to department heads, where it was really under the focus of one person, and everybody's kind of got to fill in for their own area. So it's a little more on my shoulders, and I'm a little less confident because they've required so much more. But I mean, you would do the best we can. And all we can do is tell them is like, these are the steps we are taking. And these are the things that we've done. And this is where we're going. And why we want to do it is because it's the network safety and client safety and all the rest. And see what they say. But I'd agree. It kind of depends on who, you know, the people I've seen or talked to in the past were talkers. You know, they really did like the talk and the conversation and wanted to, you know, schmooze, so to speak. I don't think there'll be much of an opportunity online. Right, right.
Okay, so is that what we have for today? We have a few ideas for next time. Okay, sounds good. Well, I see anyone at this conference. Is anyone coming?
Yes, I'll be there. Okay,
Bob. That's it? Bob, Keith? Okay. Amy? I'll say hello.
Welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you.
It's nice to see you again, Lisa.
Good to see you.
Bye, exactly. Guys.
Nice to meet you, Amy, and good to see everybody else.
Good to see everyone else.
Take care.
All right. Thank you. Be well. Be safe.
Be well. Yeah.